Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
This is the Goalkeepers Union Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the rusty voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. Rusty indeed. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Yes, you were absent, unavailable for the last podcast, which, of course, David Rouse duly stepped in for.
He did. He did very well as well. An able deputy. So I feel like that goalkeeper that's been out for a period of time, and I've now just been thrown back in. You know, I've not had a game to prepare for. I've literally just been thrown back into the mix. Now, is that the right thing to do? That's the question. Am I ready for this?
Interesting. Yes, I think that could be a theme of the show, perhaps.
Perhaps. Do you know what? And it is a little bit of a talking point, because I've seen quite a few of these recently, and it's a bit of a discussion. Like, what do you do when your number one goalkeeper is fit? And there'll be, I'm sure, a few fans probably listening to this at various clubs, because it's not just one situation this weekend, last couple of weekends. We're talking four or five situations where a goalkeeper's come back to fitness and has been potentially rushed back into a position. And I think it's a really interesting subject, because I think it's quite difficult. And again, goalkeepers listening in will understand this, where you haven't played for a period of time. In fact, number two goalkeepers understand this as well, where, of course, it's different if you're a number two and you are thrust into action and you haven't played a game for 6 or 7 weeks, and how difficult it can be to get back up to speed. The example I've probably got, and I use this a lot and I will mention it again, is I always remember when I played the FA Cup semi-final, and for me, that was the toughest game I ever played, for the fact that I didn't have a game within the 6 weeks leading up to that. And then it was Villa Park, Man United, and it was Man United when they used to be really good. And I just remember how difficult it was getting myself ready for that game, the nerves and everything that come with it, getting the timing of the game. And I'm just seeing it more and more, where it just feels like goalkeepers are being rushed back. And I get it. When your number one's fit, you want your number one in goal. I do get that. But then similarly, is there an issue where you put them back and they haven't had a reserve game to play in? They haven't had all that much training. It is so difficult to step back in. And if anything, that can sometimes damage the number one, as opposed to them stepping back in on the front foot and being able to crack on. There's actually a few examples. I know we're recording this as of the Tuesday. There'll be a couple of examples of this tonight as well. And I'm just really, really skeptical, really question as to what the best time is to bring a goalkeeper back into the fray.
As a goalkeeper then, in that scenario, and it's difficult because everyone wants to play. You would, of course, wanted to have played in that FA Cup semi-final. Even if you'd been 50% fit, I don't think you would have let on, because you would have wanted to play. And if you have been out injured and you're granted that number one spot back by your manager, everything in your powers is going to make you to want to play in that game. But is there a responsibility to yourself as a goalkeeper to stand up and say, actually, do you know what? I'm not ready to play. And it is difficult because the manager's selecting you, and it is difficult because you've got medical staff saying that you are ready. But as you've already mentioned, it could hinder you moving forward. Is there something that you can do, be that a conversation privately with the goalkeeper coach, to say, look, I'm just not ready to play here? Is there anything around that? And again, I know it's difficult because the manager might view that as you opting out of playing, but is there something, is there accountability perhaps that you can take as a goalkeeper to say, look, I'm just not ready?
Possibly, but I actually think it's more on the manager. This is a bit, and I've seen lots of examples. I won't name names because I don't think that's fair, but I've just seen lots of examples where the manager makes a call. And I think there's a psychological element here where actually, if you're a goalkeeper, and again, lots will listen to this and understand this, you want to step in on the front foot. Now, I'll go back to that Man United example. That was different because I was the number two goalkeeper, and you step in when the goalkeeper's injured, or in that case, which did make it tough, was it was stepping in for Ben Foster, who had just got man of the match in the quarterfinal away at Plymouth. He was unbelievable. And there is like an element of you're stepping in for someone who is the outright number one, and there is additional pressure because naturally people will question you coming in as the number two goalkeeper. And the, you know, again, that is what it is. That can't be helped. But I do think when a goalkeeper's coming back from injury, I just think if you're the manager, put some thought into it as to what is the best time to reintroduce them. Now, as an example, if the other goalkeeper that's just played and you've just lost 4-0 and he had a bit of a tough time, then yeah, maybe it makes sense to bring the number one back in at that point, because actually the fans will be excited to see the number one back, and you are in a way stepping in on the front foot. As long as you're physically fit and you're ready to go, then without sounding bad about the game coming up, you can almost use that as your reserve game, as your game to get yourself back into it, and then you kick on. But I just think, where I've seen examples recently where a team's just won the previous game, the number two goalkeeper has had a good game, why would you then put the number one back in when they haven't had that period of time training or that game or two? Because all that ends up happening is there's an additional pressure on the number one coming back in, and if they don't have such a good game, which often they won't because you're not at 100%, then the fans can turn a little bit and it puts even more pressure then moving forward. I just think there's been some really bizarre decisions of late to then like rush a goalkeeper back when maybe it isn't the right time to do so, where actually it makes more sense to give the number two one more game, maybe give the number one a reserve game or two, and then bring them back at the right time. Now, I'm not saying that necessarily needs to be a defeat or a poor game for the other one, because I don't think that's always right. But similarly, I think the timing of bringing goalkeepers back in is so, so important.
Very good points. Well made, Richard. A good example, actually, is Nick Pope, isn't it? Towards the back end of last season, when he had been out for a period, returned to fitness, was on the bench. It seemed like it was only a matter of time before he came in and played the last few games of the season. He didn't. Eddie Howe decided to stick with Martin Dubravka, I guess it would have been at the time. Nick Pope didn't make that appearance, has had the summer to properly recoup, and has come back all guns blazing in the Premier League and making saves, which we will indeed mention on this very show. On with the show.
Yes, let's do it. Although we did say rusty. I actually feel like I've come back quite quickly here. So maybe I am the example of coming in, and I feel like I'm on it today. Let's crack on.
Okay, starting in the Premier League at Molineux, Wolves 1, Man City 2, and Jose Sarr in for the injured Sam Johnston. A minor abductor injury, apparently, for Johnston, which will keep him out for a small period of time. But first, we are going to discuss a series of saves made by Sarr in the first half from Bernardo Silva and Savinho, in the second half from Ruben Diaz. So let's start with that.
Yeah, let's, because I thought he was really good. Really good. And it's an interesting one, Jose Sarr, because I feel like at the start of the season, you do wonder whether all the rumours and everything surrounding the goalkeeping positions at Wolves, not just Sarr, of course, Dan Bentley with offers coming in from Arsenal, the knowledge that they might look to be bringing someone else in, Sarr might be moving on. You do wonder whether that had an impact on the whole goalkeeping department. And certainly, I think Sarr will be the first to admit that some of the games earlier in the season certainly weren't his finest. But yeah, Jose Sarr is a very good goalkeeper, and certainly when it comes to shot stopping in particular, yeah, so athletic. And a couple of these saves he made, I thought, were top. You know, getting down to his right hand side so quickly, the second one in particular, through bodies, lovely set position, explodes down to his right, good hand round the post, very good in the second half as well, down to his left. And this was very much the best of Jose Sarr, and he just looked, it wasn't even him as a goalkeeper, he just looked like he had the bit between his teeth, like a bit of a point to prove. Obviously, Sam Johnson being out injured, we're told, then this gave him that opportunity to step back in and show what he can do. And credit to him, I think, you know, despite the result in the end, obviously last minute winner, I think from his point of view, he certainly built a lot of credit with this game.
Speaking of that last minute winner then, was it offside?
I knew you were going to ask me this, and I'll be honest, this is probably one of the most difficult ones that I've seen. You know, normally I'm very quick to be like, it's a foul. You know, that's very simple for me. This is such a grey area. Like, it's right in the middle. I want to ask what you think, actually, first, and then I'll give you which side I'm edging towards.
Okay. Okay. Well, to be fair, firstly, I would say that I didn't see it in real time. I did not see it in real time. It was only when they went to the replays and subsequently VAR that I first noticed it. And instantly I thought, yeah, that's offside. He's blatantly offside. He's interfering with plays inside the 6-yard box. So yeah, this will be chalked off. But as you say, the more you see it, it is a tricky one and it is a grey area, which would suggest that if there are so many grey areas, that the goal should have stood, that the decision they came to eventually was the right decision, as much as it pains me to say that. And I know that Gary Neil alluded to the goal that was chalked off for Wolves at, was it West Ham last season? The goal scored by Max Kilman, I think it was. And it was Lucas Fabianski. So yes, it was West Ham. So there are so many variables that can come into this, right? Because in that case, would Lucas Fabianski have saved the header scored by Max Kilman? Absolutely not. There's no way he's saving that. But was he interfered with? Was his view obstructed? Absolutely yes. So can the fact as to whether the goalkeeper would have saved the header regardless come into the decision? I don't think it can, because it hasn't come into the decision here. Now, was Bernardo Silva interfering with Jose Sarr? Firstly, he can't be offside initially because it's a corner, so he can't be offside. He is in an offside position when that header, when the contact is made by John Stones. But would Jose Sarr have saved it regardless? Again, I don't know whether you can factor that in. The grappling that happens at every corner you ever see. So can you say that it was enough for Bernardo Silva to have been given a foul on Jose Sarr? I don't think so. And was he out of his eyeline enough for him to not be interfering with play? I think probably yes. So as much as it pains me, like I said before, I do think the right decision was reached.
Yeah. And do you know what? I agree with pretty much all you've said there. I think, and this is where it is, it's so great. Credit to Bernardo Silva, because what he does and does brilliantly is in the second, literally the second before, I mean, he's not the biggest guy anyway, but he then ducks out of the way, ducks in the right direction. So when they freeze at a point of impact, he is far enough away and he is ducking. That being said, at the same time, when you do watch the nudge, like you say, nudges happen, that's fine. But then that does impact Jose Sarr. Like, again, point of impact, he's not quite set as he would. He might have been a fraction further closer to his goal line, potentially set, you know, again, if he was that little bit more upright, does he then have the speed? And he's certainly a very quick goalkeeper. Does he have the speed to get a hand to it, potentially? And this is why I've watched it probably 30 times, and I just can't make my mind up, because I think if Bernardo Silva isn't there at all and Jose Sarr, all he's focusing on is the ball and he's getting set on his line, ready to make the save, yes, he does have a better chance of making the save. So then does that mean that it should have been disallowed? And similarly, you watch it again, Bernardo Silva at the point of impact isn't actually there. So I am literally 50-50 on this one. And I think I feel sorry for Wolves, because I think it's one of them that another day it probably goes in their favour, you know, or it's called at the time. Because I think had it been called at the time, they'd have taken it to VAR, then I think it still would have been disallowed. It was one of those that it kind of felt like, obviously, the call at the time. It was interesting that he actually went over to the monitor. I found that interesting, because ordinarily when they go over to the monitor, you think it's going to be a change of decision. And maybe that's what VAR were pointing towards. But look, this is normally, I know people listen in to actually get verdicts and get ideas, but I am genuinely sat on the fence with this one.
Yeah, it is a tricky one. I do think the peripherals have to come into this as well. Even though that he wasn't in the direct line of Jose Sarr, it is black and white that a player is standing in an offside position inside the 6-yard box, and he is in the peripheral vision of Jose Sarr. So could that come into play? Sky Sports obviously went to the rules, offside interfering with an opponent, and it was one of them which said making an obvious action which clearly impacts on the ability of an opponent to play the ball. So did Bernardo Silva do that? Again, it's up for debate. I did think it was quite funny, and perhaps I shouldn't laugh, but and this brings in another point here, in that no Wolves player appealed to the referee. Jose Sarr was just spread-eagled on the floor, disappointed, of course, at the fact that they conceded a 90-plus, whatever it was, minute goal for Man City to win the game. But no one appealed. If he's getting up off of his feet to appeal to the referee, perhaps that might have made a difference. But it was just the delay from Gary O'Neill and his backroom staff. Neil Cutler, of course, included in that, bursting out of the dugout to make it clear that he was offside. I thought that was quite funny. But yes, all in all, very, very tricky, this one.
Yeah, no, I would fully agree.
Okay, let's move on to St James's Park. Newcastle 0, Brighton 1. And Nick Pope from Kaoru Mitoma mentioned this at the top. What a save with his head. Incredible improvisation here.
Yeah. Do you know what? And the reason this for me is such a good save is that it's a natural reaction to get your head out of the way. So ordinarily, someone shoots, the first thing that goes is your head goes and you try and get a hand to it. You know, and I've seen some really good examples of this. But of course, the speed at which it happens, a lot of the time you'll get your head out of the way, but you can't get your hand there quick enough. And of course, the ball ends up in the net. But to actually have the awareness, the bravery, I think, to an extent, because he had enough time to move his head out of the way of this one. But you can see the actual action he makes is he knows it's coming towards his head and he doesn't even try to move his hands. You know, he literally just makes the decision and commits and says, I'm making this save with my head. And it was really weird. When I watched it at first, I couldn't figure out what had happened because the action or the movement of his body was so unusual in that moment. But it was because it was like a diving header. You know, he's got the head. He's actually had to move his head towards the ball and his body's gone with it. So for that reason, yeah, like you say, improvisation, top, top save.
Tottenham 4, West Ham 1. Firstly, a mention for Guglielmo Vicario. That's 50 games in all competitions for Spurs now. But Alphonse Areola, want to mention him. The goal from Yves Bissouma that put Spurs 2-1 up. And the own goal credited to Areola, which was horrible to watch, really. A strike from Son Heung-min. It came off Areola. It came off Jean-Claire Todibo. But he was given an own goal credited against him. Spawny goal of the week. It's certainly up there.
Yeah. Well, firstly, in regards to that goal, I just think he's very unlucky. Like, I don't think he's done anything wrong here. Like, he sets well. He goes to make the save with the foot. And it's just unfortunate that the defender's in such close proximity and comes back off him and goes in the net. It's just one of those things. Don't think there's a great deal he could have done there. I think he will be disappointed with the second. And I think there's a couple of other good examples of this weekend. In fact, we mentioned the Jose Sarr save. One of the things I liked about that was he was moving to his left, set well, and got himself back to his right to make the save on one of them in particular. Whereas this, it's one of those where, and again, a few good examples of this weekend, where essentially he's guessed. As he's come to his left, he's just gone with the momentum and he has just gambled that it's going to go to his left-hand side. Now, again, perfect world. This all happens in a split second. If he could have moved across, managed to get set, even if he didn't get into the perfect position that he would have wanted to be in at that point, even if he could have just set prior to the shot and just made the decision to then react to the shot itself, I think he quite possibly gets there, or certainly is able to make a good attempt towards the ball because the finish itself wasn't right in the corner. And I think if he does get set, he probably saves this. But I think it's just one of those situations where he's moving across the line and he has just continued and made the gamble that the ball would go that way.
A few more to mention in the Premier League. Bournemouth 2, Arsenal 0. And wanted to bring this one up because it was an unusual performance from David Raya. Just not at it. You tend not to see this too much from the Spaniard.
Yeah, well, a few moments of note. There was the, yeah, bit of an unusual one, the miss kick. When I first saw this, I thought that maybe he had been tackled or it deflected off the other player, but you realise that it is just one of them. I think it's hit his standing leg, like that classic one, where then he's just, as he's gone to plant, it's just caught his other leg and then he's missed the ball completely. So look, it happens from time to time, but a really, really unusual one there. The other two moments I was going to point out, firstly, a pass where he's tried to play it into the six and it's got intercepted. What I would say is brilliant defending this. You know, you watch it again, and I thought the angles of approach from the strikers are making it really difficult for him. And I do wonder whether Moore will pick up on this in terms of how Arsenal want to play. And I just thought their direction of attack made it so tough for him. And in the end, the pass into the six isn't an easy one. He's got to try and almost curl it round the striker into the path of the player he wants to play it to, rather than just the bounce pass. So firstly, I do think big credit to Bournemouth. I think they've done their homework and certainly it worked. And yeah, he just didn't quite execute the pass, which again, you know, ordinarily 99 times out of 100, he would execute this. And lastly, the spilled cross, because he ends up making a really good save on the back of it. And again, it's just one of those things. He's kind of gone down to his left and he spilled it. It's as simple as that. Where I'll give him credit again, though, is that I think his position's excellent. Like, the cross is outside the six-yard box, probably 7 yards out. I think most goalkeepers don't even attempt to come for this. I think most, their starting position is that much closer to the near post. And this is one where you turn into your goal and set. So as much as it's not great and it's one that he'll look at and he straight away held his hand up and, you know, he knows he should hold that ball coming in. At the same time, it's very positive goalkeeping, which, you know, we associate with David Raya. He's very front-footed. He looks to affect things. And this was a good example where, you know, if he cuts out that cross, it's top, top goalkeeping. And then once he doesn't cut it out, he's very quick to get up and make the follow-up save. So, yeah, just a bit of a scruffy performance is probably what I would describe it as. And at the same time, still lots of positives in there.
over to the City Ground, Nottingham Forest 1, Crystal Palace 0. And Matt Sells increasingly looking like a shrewd piece of recruitment from Nottingham Forest, which we've not said really regarding their goalkeeping strategy in the past couple of seasons. But yes, looking very strong, the Belgian, having a very good season so far, certainly. And good saves in the second half from Ebere Eze and Jeffrey Schlupp. The winner in the second half scored by Chris Wood for Forest. Dean Henderson perhaps culpable with this one. A bit of criticism labelled at him after the game.
Yeah, we'll start with Henderson. You could see straight away he was frustrated with himself. And at the same time, again, we'll always go into a bit of detail as to why an error, and we will call it an error, like this might happen. And in his defence, the shot is taken so early. You actually watch Dean Henderson's position before, which is good. He's 7-8 yards out. As soon as the ball then breaks to the player, he realises he's got to retreat, but he never quite gets set. At the same time, it's a really good strike, and it's always arcing back in towards him. So I think Dean Henderson's taken off. He's having to dive backwards purely because of his position. And as the ball's arcing towards him, it makes it really awkward because it's not one where he can get a hand on it. He's then more reliant on getting like his forearm to it to try and get it round the post. And it's just mistimed. You know, you watch it again, a couple of inches lower, and it ends up being a very good save. It goes out for a corner, but it's that horrible one that hits the underside of your arm, squirms into the corner, and you could see instantly that he was frustrated with himself. And Matt Sells, yeah, certainly some credit here. I thought the save, top-hand save, is a top save. That is going right in the top corner with pace, and he's moved his feet well, got up, got the top hand to it. This is an excellent save, and I think the one to his right-hand side as well, through bodies, really good set position, explodes well to his right-hand side, and you can see he enjoyed it.
It was Liverpool 2, Chelsea 1 at Anfield. And like Vicario, Quevin Kelleher, 50 games up for Liverpool. But we're going to talk about Robert Sanchez here. And unfortunately, more to the point, we're going to talk about the narrative surrounding Robert Sanchez. Now, like we've heard many times before, it was just quite an uncomfortable watch and listen when it came to the opinions of Robert Sanchez, namely from Gary Neville again, because from the outset it seemed like he was going for Sanchez, really. There was one moment, I think, early on when he gave a bit of a grunt as soon as Sanchez had the ball at his feet, and Neville made out like he was worried about what the Spaniard was going to do before he then unleashed, I think, a 60-yard pass to set Chelsea on their way. There was the moment with the penalty, which Neville didn't take kindly to, which was, of course, chalked off. And there was the second goal scored by Curtis Jones, which Neville came to belatedly on Sanchez after seeing, I think, the 10th replay on that occasion. But yes, the press coverage of him thereafter, which again, I would say we've seen before, wasn't great towards Sanchez. And yeah, just not pleasant really to watch or listen to.
Yeah, well, look, I feel like I'll be repeating maybe what I've said before, but similar to you, I was watching the game and I think he even made a comment at one point, because when he's played that pass, which, I mean, you say 60 yards, I think it was more like 70 or 80, like just an unbelievable pass to put the player through. But he even made a comment along the lines of, oh, he nearly proved me wrong with what he did before. And it's like, well, no, he's not there to prove you wrong, Gary. That's not your job. Your job is to, yeah, commentate on the game. And for me, there's, you know, a bit of a psychological point here in that, you know, certainly some of the stuff that I learned when I did a lot of this work is that you can find what you look for. You know, if you've got an idea about someone, you can find it. And that's not just in football, that's in everyday life. Like, you find what you look for. And it's just annoying listening to him because it's almost like he doesn't want to see anything good about Rob Sanchez. So he will, the moment there is a moment, he will pick up on it and he will elaborate and he will go into, you know, great detail. And actually a lot of what he's saying is so far off it. Like, the lack of knowledge he has is incredible. And it's incredible that he has a role like he does. And still at this point, and I know I always make the same point, I can't help but feel that Sky must be goading him on, because it's so tough to listen to, and every goalkeeper listening in must be finding it difficult to listen to. Now, look, did Rob Sanchez have his best ever game? No, there were one or two moments. But actually, when you look at the key moments, for a start, the penalty that was disallowed, Rob Sanchez actually does well here, you know. And again, the problem is that Gary Neville can't articulate it. So at first, he's like, oh, it's clumsy, it's messy. He does the stupid noises that he makes and, you know, the usual kind of Gary Neville antics. But then you watch it again, and as a goalkeeper you're watching it, Sanchez does really well because he's coming out, he's staying on his feet, he's not diving in, he's waiting, and then he finally realises that he can come and do a barrier, which he does, and he wins the ball. And obviously they gave the penalty, they realised it was a mistake. Now, surely when Gary Neville sees that, you know, and sees the angle from in front, where he's then made a very good save. At that point, if you've got the awareness as a commentator, just hold your hands up and say, I was wrong. Actually, do you know what? He's approached very well. He's then made the spread and he's made a good save. Now, in terms of it being unorthodox, I think he called it, and awkward or whatever else he called it, no, like if he dives in at feet straight away, that's probably the wrong decision because the lad will lift it over him. If he then stays further back, again, it's probably the wrong decision because he can slide it past him. He gradually comes forward at the point of impact. He makes a very good save. And yes, the player goes over and does a somersault, which can happen. You know, so the shape was absolutely fine, but he couldn't articulate. And all he was trying to do is, again, get on Sanchez. You know, the amount of times he'll call him lucky or whatever else. And actually, there's lots of good things that he's doing in the game, which he just won't see or is unable to see. Maybe he's not educated enough. And so it does. It makes it a really, really tough watch. And the other point that I'll just make on this is that, you know, this is the other bit, and it's not just Gary Neville, it's a lot of the commentators, and it's a lot of us in general, in that we all have preconceived ideas on what we want a player to be. And I think that's what's making this tough, is that Gary Neville has an idea of a goalkeeper in mind, of what he likes, and that's absolutely fine. But I'll keep making this point, in that there's so many top goalkeepers out there that have different styles. You know, whether they're very relaxed as a goalkeeper, whether they're very tense, whether they're a screamer and a shouter, whether they're a bit quieter. Again, there's no right or wrong way, and different horses for different courses. Like, what actually works for you? What works for the team? What works for the manager? And again, it's fitting that. But I think when your job is as a commentator, you need to have a broadness and awareness that goalkeepers can be that different and still do it very, very well. The interesting thing with Sanchez is that, yeah, I get it. He's getting a bit of stick because some of the errors he's made have been quite obvious errors. You know, maybe the first game of the season, I think the Brighton game in particular, where, yeah, look, they're obvious errors, he'll hold his hands up. But actually, as a goalkeeper and a goalkeeping nerd, you look at a lot of the stats and he's top of so many stats, you know, in terms of how proactive he is, how many crosses he comes for. You know, talk about playing out and they say that he struggles with his feet. I'm not necessarily seeing that. Again, he's top of a lot of these stats. So you can see why the Chelsea manager really, really likes him, because he has the potential to be the best in the world. Like, you can see it, his shape, size, the way he moves, the saves he makes are top. Now, does he have a big error in him from time to time? Yes, he does. But it just seems that a lot of the commentators will pick up on that, and that's where the sole focus will be, as opposed to all the good stuff that he's doing throughout the game. And going back to the point with a Gary Neville, then would you prefer a goalkeeper who is super safe, who maybe doesn't make those saves, but doesn't make the big errors, but is far less effective than the likes of a Rob Sanchez, than the likes of a David Raya, who he's given a lot of stick to before? You know, he'll always kind of gravitate to an Edison Allison. I mean, that's easy. We can all do that. And again, they're playing in teams that probably have a quarter of the amount of work to do than any other goalkeeper. But these goalkeepers that are effective, are proactive, they're going to make more mistakes. Law of averages, they're going to make more mistakes. But can you actually appreciate the good that they bring?
So the winner then, scored by Curtis Jones. Was there more that Sanchez could have done in that moment?
So I think this comes back to styles of goalkeeping, because look, David De Gea, as an example, and we spoke about him a lot, he would have done exactly the same as what Sanchez did in this moment. Now, is that right or wrong? Or is this one of those moments where you do come out and almost dive forwards towards the ball? Now, I think initially, when the ball's come in, he's had his touch. Then once he's had his touch and it's under control, then the argument would be you probably don't dive in at that point. You come and make yourself as big as you can, which he did. You know, he came and made a big barrier, and credit to Jones, he slotted it past him. Now, other goalkeepers might have done this differently, in that there's certainly Vicario, as an example. We've seen this over and over. I think that the moment the lad has a touch, he probably comes out, dives head first, and tries to get his hands towards the ball. Now, it might still have been the same result. That's the bit that we just don't know. It might still have been the same result. I think that one, once he's had a touch, I probably would go all in and just throw myself at him. But again, I think it's a situation where there's no right or wrong, and it just depends on the style of goalkeeper.
Okay, and finally, in the Premier League, can someone please sound the goalkeeper assist klaxon? Bernd Leno, Richard, for Raul Jimenez. Fulham falling 3-1 at home to Aston Villa, but not before the German goalkeeper had floated over a sumptuous ball for the Mexican to finish.
Yep, this was a lovely strike. Lovely, lovely ball. In fact, it's a couple of assists this week. I've gone through my notes, and I know we're going to be doing another klaxon shortly. But look, Bert Leno, very, very good start to the season. And yeah, always nice to look at flash scores, look at the lineups, and just see that little assist ball next to a player. I do enjoy that.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
It is the EFL overview starting in the Championship where, Richard, you did mention it there. Can we please sound the goalkeeper's klaxon again? Thomas Kaminski, another lovely ball floated over the top for Jacob Brown to finish and put the gloss on a 3-0 win for Luton over rivals Watford at the Kenny. Some lovely distribution actually throughout the EFL this weekend. Special mentions in the Championship go to Jamie Cumming, Jack Hannick, Lawrence Vigouroux and Freddie Woodman for your better than average passes, I'm going to say, into midfield. And Woodman in particular was looking very much the Goodman in Preston's 1-0 defeat of Coventry. 3 points maintained thanks to Freddie's fine stop from a Bobby Thomas header late on. A first 3 points of the season for Portsmouth. They beat QPR at Loftus Road and had Nicholas Schmidt to thank for saving Jimmy Dunn's downward header with the score at 1-1. And finally, can we take a moment to acknowledge the fanfare, the brouhaha around Ian Melier starting for Leeds against Sheffield United on Friday night? Yes, he made a big error last time out, but the attention paid to this was a bit much, wasn't it? I can kind of understand if he's, you know, a young lad, a novice perhaps, making his debut, but this is a guy who's enjoyed what the best part of 200 odd games in France and in England. It was almost like he was never going to be able to play football again. It just seemed crazy, the reaction that they gave to the error. I know that it was a big error against Sunderland, and there was a gap of a couple of weeks before he was able to play again, but asking Daniel Farker about it in the pre-match presser and, yeah, all the other stuff just seemed a bit much.
Yeah, well, we'll start with Kaminski. Enjoyed this for the fact it was a goalkeeping assist, not so much for the fact that it was against Watford, Luton Watford. Yeah, disappointing for the Gloryhorns. Big save, as you say, Freddie Woodman. Great save down to his left. I always enjoy these where it's not just the save down to his left, but it's actually the trajectory once he makes a save. You know, it kind of reminds me, yeah, it's one of those that just looks that little bit more pleasing to the eye. But no, top save from Freddie Woodman. You mentioned Schmidt as well. He's obviously got his chance now at Portsmouth and appears to be taking it. I know that there was a lot of thought that went into that recruitment, someone they've been tracking for some time. So I'm very interested to see more and more of him. And yeah, in regards to Ilan Melier, I think we can liken it to an extent as to maybe what David De Gea went through when he was at Man United. Because again, for me, it's just the size of club. You know, I think if, and this is credit to Leeds, I think if it's a different club, it's certainly nowhere near highlighted anywhere near as much as it is when it is a Leeds in the Championship and the amount that then sits around, the amount of fans they've got, etc. But as you say, he's played so many games. Mistakes like this will happen from time to time. It was obviously a really, really bizarre error that he made and one that we spoke about in detail before. But no doubt now he and Leeds will kick on.
into League One, where it was a 4-1 win for Reading over Crawley, but that perhaps wasn't reflective of the game itself. So the away side far superior in possession of forcing David Button into 7 saves at the Medeski. Is it the Medeski still? Is it the Medeski Stadium still? What is it? The least. No, that's wrong. Leasing. Select Car Leasing Stadium, I should say. Pick of the bunch down to his right from Ronan Darcy in the second half. Josh Keeley, worth a mention. A league debut for him at the expense of Zach Hemming at Leighton Orient. A solid performance, but the O's losing by a solitary goal at Northampton. Also worth a mention is Jacob Chapman, enjoying a period of 4 straight games for Huddersfield and growing with each one. A lovely zinger to get the ball rolling for Callum Marshall to bag the 2nd of 3 scored in the 3-1 beating of Bristol Rovers. 2 of the spawniest goals of the week came in 1 game at Cambridge. You have to feel for Sam Tickle here on the receiving end of 2 horrid deflections as Wigan became the first team to grant the U's 3 points this term. Franco Ravazzoli keeping his place at Wickham despite the signing of Shamal George from Livingston. Unbeaten in 8 now since he stepped in and very nearly sounding the klaxon for the 3rd time this episode. Peterborough's Jed Steer denying Gareth McCleary from his arrowed pass. It ended 3-1 to the Chairboys. And Ryan Allsop, a 2nd penalty stop of the season for him at a crucial time for Birmingham. They were 2-1 up at Lincoln when Rico Hackett stepped up to equalise, only to be bested by the bluest of noses from 12 yards. Some silky and somewhat customary, you have to say, skills demonstrated in that one from Allsop as well.
Yeah, we'll start with David Button. I actually watched this game and it was a top performance because... Yeah, I'm watching the game. Obviously finished 4-1 to Reading, but I thought Crawley were excellent. I mean, defensively, not so good. And obviously 4 goals conceded again, but I thought on balance of play, you know, they play this game again and it's exactly the same game. I think Crawley win it more often than not. But yeah, several big, big saves. Certainly the one down to his right that you mentioned. Excellent save, full stretch. Yeah, it's a world-class save. And yeah, several bits of impressive distribution. Love the... I love the pass from Chapman, which, as you say, eventually led to a goal. It's that one where it can be difficult as a right footer playing it out to the left-hand side, but he's kind of cut it. He's kept it along the ground the whole way, probably 40 yards, but it's that one. Like, I think about me doing it. I was left-footed, but I think about me doing that. It's got duck hook written all over it and into the stands, but I thought it was a beautiful pass. Ryan Allsop, yeah, really making that place his own. Stepping in for Bailey Peacock-Farrell, and obviously big expectation with Birmingham, and that's that kind of moment when they're 2-1 up, penalty against, of course that goes in, and who knows, they end up losing that game and suddenly there's that much more pressure on Birmingham, but they're going along really nicely, and to make a save in that moment will only endear himself to the fans even more. And as you mentioned, the silky skills taking on the striker, very, very good. But again, it's something that's certainly not too uncommon for him. Really felt for Sam Tickle. I think we've all had one of these in our time. Ball off the post, comes back off you, goes in the net. I remember I had a couple, and again, just absolutely nothing you can do.
And in League Two, where there is a big welcome back to Joe Day, making his first EFL appearance since April of last year, now at Cheltenham as a player coach. Owen Evans was out injured, and Day made a big late save from Lyle Taylor in an away win for Cheltenham at Colchester. And speaking of big saves, there was a double dose from Jamie Jones in a humdinger of a Northwest clash between Crewe and Salford. So 2 top tip overs here. First from Shiloh Tracy's header, and then in injury time to keep out Owen Lunt's pile driver. Excellent goalkeeping from Jones in that one. And the same can be said of Billy Crellin, also with a late save as he flew across his line to pat away a Kean Spence free kick in Accrington's 1-0 win over Barrow. That's 3 wins in 4 now since taking the gloves. Stanley were winless in 7 prior to that. And one of the teams on the wrong end of that newfound form were Gillingham last time out. That was the 3rd of their now 4 straight defeats after falling to Bradford on Saturday. Very busy and very varied afternoon for Jake Turner on his return from injury. Teddy Sharman-Lowe, another on the near assist list. Dan Barton doing well to parry Billy Sharp's effort after he'd been put through by the Chelsea loanee. Doncaster winning away at Swindon. And Tommy Simkin, always in the action, always a mention really on the podcast for him this season. Walsall convincingly seeing off Grimsby at Blundell Park, but the home side scoring a consolation goal courtesy of Donovan Wilson after he dispossessed the Stoke loanee. Foul or no foul?
Right, so I didn't see this until you sent the footage through to me, and I've watched it and I was trying to figure out afterwards, did they actually give the goal here?
Yes.
Are you serious?
They've given the goal, yes.
Oh,
a goal was given.
Oh my God, that is ridiculous. Like, how is that not a foul? If that happens anywhere else on the field, he's taken the striker on. The striker's just pushed him over. How is that in any way, shape or form not a foul? That is unbelievable. I'd be fuming.
Yeah, he wasn't though. He just kind of, I guess they were 4-0 up at the time, so they just accepted it.
Yeah, but still, to keep your clean sheet and, no, this is like not even 100% a foul. This is 1,000% a foul. I'd be devastated. I would be running after the referee. I'd be asking for VAR to be brought into League Two at a situation like this. But yeah, to mention a few others, top save, as you mentioned, from Joe Day. Really, really good spread. Came out, good save with the feet. I thought Jamie Jones, both saves are top. You know, really elite saves up to his right, up to his left. Billy Crelin, credit to him because it's a name we haven't spoke about too often over the past few years. Obviously had a time at Bolton, didn't go so well. Has found himself at Everton playing a lot of 21s football, but great to see him back out there because so much made of him when he was younger. Really hope he kicks on now. And also to give a mention to Alex Bass, because I know it was a busy afternoon for him too. Team of the week, I believe. So big well done to him. Notts County going along nicely. And Sharman Lowe, really good loan this for him again to really try and build his way into Chelsea's thoughts longer term and certainly making a good fist of things at Doncaster. Clean Sheet Club. Well, you said at the start, Matt, that I was rusty, and certainly I'm rusty when it comes to this because it's been quite some time that you forced me to read this out, but it is time for this. And we start in the Premier League. Bart Verbruggen tally doubled. Jordan Pickford, none sixth, 2-2. Kepa Arrizabalaga, account opened. Matt Sells, 1-0 thrice. Into the Championship, Ilan Melier bouncing back with a blank. Jack Anik, clean captain. Thomas Kaminski, champion de Dendermonde. Freddie Woodman, hat-trick. Ainsley Pears, damn the hegemony of the apples. Max O'Leary, feeling furiosa. James Trafford, one short of a siren. Anthony Patterson, heading North Shields. Into League One, Vicente Reyes, account open mark two. Murphy Cooper, seventh heaven. Lee Burge, first win and clean of the campaign. Arthur Okonkwo, feeling sixy. And into League Two, Max Thompson, account open mark three. Billy Crelin, account open mark four. And Alex Bass, all black and white on the night.
You've been very good this episode, Richard. Very good. But yes, that was great to listen to that. Can you say the word hegemony again for me, please?
I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. What are you doing to me? You've made this... I mean, what's the Thomas Kaminski one? Champion Dendermonde? Ainsley Pez, damn the hegemony. What are you doing to me?
Brilliant. Brilliant. Love it. Love every second of it. I also love the table, Richard, which is dominated by League One. And we have three goalkeepers with seven clean sheets. Sam Tickle with 7 in 11. Murphy Cooper with 7 in 11. But currently top of the pile is Joe Whitworth on loan at Exeter from Crystal Palace. 7 clean sheets in 10 games so far.
Massive, massive well done to Joe. They are flying. He is flying. Really pleased for him. It's been an excellent loan for him so far. And he seems to be growing with every single game. Long may it continue.
Absolutely. And just to finish, Richard, a nice little story from the weekend and last night, actually, because sometimes we like to delve into non-league. I'm going to talk about a goalkeeper called Woody Williamson, a young lad on loan at Chelmsford City from Ipswich Town. So the story here is that he was on the bench for their game against Farnborough, who topped the table in the National League South at the weekend. And Chelmsford had a player go down. They had no more outfield players on the bench. So they brought on Woody Williamson to make his, I believe, his senior debut in men's football. And he came on as a striker in the final few minutes of the game and very nearly scored a late equaliser. Mad story, this. And it was funny to see him up there because as much as we laugh about outfielders in goal, seeing a goalkeeper play outfield is, yeah, it's quite funny. I'm not going to say cumbersome, but I'm just going to say they don't quite look right. You talk a lot about anaerobic versus aerobic, and I think that's quite clear to see when a goalkeeper goes outfield. But he did, in fact, make his proper senior debut yesterday for Chelmsford. He started in the game against Hemel Hempstead. It was 2 apiece. But yeah, just a funny story from non-league. You tend to get these from time to time. A goalkeeper on loan at a non-league club coming on as a striker.
Yeah, and he, as you say, he did nearly score. What was quite amusing is that he's come on and he's got all of his hands strapped, like you do as a goalkeeper. You know, most goalkeepers will have strappings of sorts. So, yeah, he's come on with all the strappings that a goalkeeper would. And he did nearly score. Ball to the far post, let well, which you would expect from a goalkeeper, and just put his head at the wrong side of the post. But no, pleased for him that he got his start as a goalkeeper last night in their draw against Hemel. So, a big word on to him.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between their sticks, keepers.
Oh, wait.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.